Blog Talk Radio.
Afternoon, everyone. This is Down South and Dirty, episode 22. We have a quite interesting topic today, and today is one of those call-in shows. So today, if you have anything that you need to say or want to come in and get involved, the guest call-in number is 657-383-0995. Again, that is 657-383-0995. This is for all the live listeners that listen to Down South and Dirty on Sunday afternoons. Today's topic is, why does the South always come last in progress? Last week we touched on some issues dealing with Southern living. This, that, and other. We were talking about Selma and House of Cards and all of the different things that a real America Works program would deal with. And we had wonderful guests and this, that, other. But this week we want to give you a chance to chime in. So let's get into it. We all know the South history is full of events where, you know, those who empower the Old Boys Club always seem to be on the wrong side of history. Slavery. Well, actually, let's go back even further than slavery. Let's go all the way back to the American Revolution. The South was not a big player when it came to joining the American Revolution. I mean, you had a lot more and well-organized Tory militia groups in the South than you did in the Northeastern states and the Mid-Atlantic states. It was actually quite hard for the Continental Army to operate in the South because it basically was the first American Civil War when it came to the South. It was evenly split. You had people who just didn't want to upset the system because it was going to upset their livelihood. Most didn't get involved until they understood that the British didn't see them any differently than they saw any other colonists. Then we rotated elements to slavery. Slavery was abolished 20, 30 years before the South even decided to even, you know, they never gave it any idea. It took a war to stop it. Then let's roll even further. As we were starting to modernize and industrialism started taking place, the South again, even though we was an agricultural-based society, even the industrialization of agriculture didn't come to the South until it had taken root in many other places in the industrialized world, which kept us, that people didn't see the importance of having electricity and all of that until FDR, a northerner, came down here, lived down here for a while and said, you know what, it'd be nice if these folks had some electricity. Then we come to civil rights, which was a tail end of dealing with the post-antebellum period and Reconstruction, the South fought in tooth and nail, and it took federal troops again to come down here to get, at least except on paper, the terms of civil rights. And today we still have these issues. We have the issues of marriage equality in the South. We have the idea of, you know, single-payer health care. Still have voters' rights issues. True free enterprise in the war on drugs. The South cannot seem to get it right. So today, I'm going to ask some questions, got some theories of my own, but I really hope some people call in and kind of give their opinion on where they think we're going wrong here in the South. It's really terrible because we can't seem, again, to just get it. So, again, the number 657-8398. Let me start over again. This happens from time to time. It's live radio. 657-383-0995. Call in and get your voice out there, and I'm looking forward to hearing from some folks. But let's go ahead and let me start. I got some theories on why it takes the South so long, and it basically gets down to the issue of racism and also to privilege. It goes into the fact that, okay, I started off talking about, you know, the revolution and this, that, and the other. Well, you got to think about it. Southern planters knew that, okay, in the beginning, the British was only talking about freeing slaves of those who were in rebellion. So guess what? If we ain't going to free, we stay on their side, they're not going to mess with our slaves. And we already know that there were people calling for abolition early in the revolution because it did not fit with the tone of all men were created equal that the Declaration of Independence had called for. We in the South, and I say we because in this day and time, we got to be careful about not dividing ourselves, because all of us who live in the South are somewhat guilty of helping the cause of progress not to take place, including African Americans, Hispanics. We all have those things that we are very conservative on and that we really choose not to give up. So, you know, and civil rights is being, you know, equal rights, and I'm not just going to say civil rights. Equal rights is one of those things. Because we know today is the big LGBT issue. We got the state of Alabama who has gotten the word that the federal government said, hey, your ban on marriage equality is unconstitutional, and you need to allow marriage licenses. And you got the Chief Justice in Alabama saying, hey, I'm not going to accept this. Our dead bodies, we can do what we want to do. Not understanding, you've played this game in the South like 3 or 4 times, and it always comes out in the end that you end up losing. It doesn't, you know, if you don't believe in gay marriage, I've said it time and time again, just don't get gay married. Why are these people who are basically saying that I believe in smaller government, government shouldn't be involved in people's lives and this, that, and the other, are the first people to always want to impose government restrictions to people's lives who don't think like them. They're selfish and it smells of bigotry. That I'm free as long as it deals with me. You know, when it comes to deal with you, you know, I'm not trying to fight for it if it doesn't affect me. You'll see in the South that it does not become an issue until it starts affecting folks who are conservative. You will see Republican representatives and elected officials, when one of their kids come out LGBT, you start seeing them acquire easily LGBT issues. So if you're a kid right now and your parent is a staunch conservative, and particularly being a public servant, getting to come out, you coming out will probably be the best thing for the movement. Because your parents, if they truly love you, usually will come stand to your side. If they don't, then you know they're truly the evil son of bitches that they are. And yet you still can come out and say, hey, I'm gay, I'm proud. And I'm going to stand for what I believe in, and I'm not going to let anybody keep me down.
And but these people, it was, again, medical marijuana legislation is being pushed hard by some folks from that right now. Why? Because it's hitting home now. They have kids who have autism. They have kids who suffer from different ailments and childhood diseases that cannabis oil and marijuana will be able to take care of. They have grandparents and parents whose pain have been felt. They have fibromyalgia and all these different other issues that medical marijuana can face. So now you see a large conservative block standing with liberals who said, and progressives who said for the longest time that the war on drugs was wrong, and why these people have seen it because it's affecting their households. So to me, what keeps the South from coming, what keeps South coming in last is their selfishness. You know, we love to talk about how all folks have great hospitality, and we love the chef, but I have to sometimes take and dig the different way because people who want to live with miles and miles and miles between them and the folks is, that's next door usually don't like to be bothered. They want to live by themselves. They want to live free from obligation to their fellow neighbor. Some of them like it's just selfishness. I don't want to be out by myself, so I can do what I want to do, and you don't have anything to do with it. And that pervades through long-serving thinking. You know, same thing about health care. Nobody on the right really gets confused about this thing until the bills drop down, you know, the medical bills drop on that onto their laps, and then they get like, you know what? That Obamacare might not be a bad thing. You know, it will lessen my cost down out the door. If I was, you will get in with a single pay, then they understand that that idea is shared risk. And they want to get into it. All the way it hits them because you're starting to hear law voters talking about single payer health care because now the hospital is shutting down. That's why it's very hard to do on your own is because if you're not a doctor or a nurse trained already, you need somebody else to come treat you. And if you have somebody else to come treat you, they usually, you know, they just good at it, they want something in exchange for the time and evidence takes to get to where you are. And it sure not be nice to take it off and some shared risk. Because you see it taking place. I don't know a lot of you people listen to Christian radio or not, but if you listen to Christian radio, there are a lot of different Christian groups who are trying to oppose to the Affordable Care Act who are trying to get co-ops out of that health care. But even then, the shared risk you're putting in there is not going to be the same shared risk that you share with the risk with all the other American citizens. That's the part of being involved in a civilization. And that's the good part about being involved in a community. Is because there's shared risk. There's not just shared risk for defense and public safety, but there's shared risk for those who want it for health care, shared risk for education. And if you got one place, if you got a couple of people who want to get together and start a school, which that's basically what public education is that the government is saying, hey, we got our teachers. You send these people are dedicated to giving education to people. You send your children there, then you can take your energy instead of everybody educating their own child, and you can put it towards something that makes the rest of society greater. Whether if you're a farmer, instead of your wife having to run about trying to teach the children, she can help produce, help the farm produce, which then helps the farmer bring in more money. You can help, you know, she can go do something else with somebody in the family that instead of trying to worry about education, they're worried about doing something else that, again, will benefit the rest of society. It's a shared risk program. That's what it is. Our nation is a giant co-op in which we all have a say. That's what democracy is really all about. And but you have people in the head that have been inside that have been told that, you know, self-reliance is the greatest thing in the world. Self-reliance is great. It's good to be able to depend on yourself, but a person who's also, you know, if everybody has a certain level of self-reliance, and then we all know our skill sets, we share those things, and guess what? We build a stronger society. And that's one of the things I think we forget sometimes down here. Voters' rights. When it comes to talking about voters' rights, why do you need to talk about it? Because it's a fear factor there. You know, it's easy to think about everybody having equal voting rights and everybody looks the same, everybody thinks the same, and you pretty much know how it's going to roll. When you look at gerrymandering, we want to put everybody that thinks the same in the same district. But what happens is that when you have everybody that thinks the exact same way, it stalls growth. Not just from an economic standpoint, but from a civilization standpoint. And nobody ever steps outside the box and tries to move things forward. And that's why America is the great nation that it is because we have this diverse population that truly can come tackle the problem from different angles and drive it. But when you have the South, and when you look at the South Connecticut, we have always operated in the South as a one-party entity. It's been a series of dictatorships. You know, first it was the Democratic dictatorship, now it's the Republican dictatorship. Some dictators, they just enjoy being a party because the Democratic Party started to become more of a diverse machine and was prepared to start tackling things from different directions, and it was starting to look like two parties, so the people who were not being on change went to the Republican Party and took their power with them. What we need in the South, we need is a good balanced government. We need competitive government. I mean, this is the one thing that I cannot get to understanding is that you listen to Republicans talk about competition being a driver of economic growth. Why is that same thing not looked at when you're talking about it from a political standpoint? If you want to drive innovation from a governmental standpoint to give people good government, then they have competing ideas sitting out there in the best ideas win. That's the idea. It goes back to the selfishness. I want what I want for me. It's good for me. It's good for those who think like me. And I don't want anything any different. It comes from a kind of stubbornness. And that same competition thing rolls into this free market idea that you have coming from the right. And I don't like to use the term free market. I like the word free enterprise. Because free enterprise, to me, puts out what we truly want in America. We want some guy to sit there and say, you know what, I'm tired of working for somebody else. I want to pick up and do for myself, and I want the opportunity to go out there and do it for myself. That's free enterprise to me. And I can understand there being, and the reason we have regulations on the market now, because if you didn't, the big guys will squeeze the little guy out. That's what regulation is about. It's about leveling the playing field so that the little guy can come in, introduce his product or service, and compete on a level with the big guy, then if he has a better product or a service, he can compete and possibly surpass the big guy and become the big guy himself. That's the American dream. But the way it's been played out right now, it's been pretty much squashed from the selling perspective, is that they have signed this free market law that is basically based on big entities being able to use big influence to suppress it, and that comes back to corruption. The South has always been big on corruption. You know, they like to talk about Cannon Hall in D.C., I mean, Washington and in New York City, and the Chicago machine and how corrupt it is, but the Southern government is just as freaking corrupt as any one of those two machines. Just as much grasping money moves across the doggone spectrum than it does in any other situation. It's crazy when you sit down and you think about the way it moves and when it happens. It's the same thing, but they constantly tell us a lie that because we're in a different part of the country, that for some reason our ways are better. Now, historically, Southerners were some of the smartest people in the country. If you look at all the innovators that are American-born, they come from the South. The Virginia planters and their money and their ideas And we have the power of the American Republic to be able to stand up on his two feet. They also, because they felt like they wanted to have their will and they thought they were smarter than everybody else, also kept America from progressing at the speed that it could have progressed. I mean, it's just crazy. And I really would love folks to get involved in this conversation, and I know people are out there listening. Because I go back and I look at my numbers after the show and I see folks sitting there listening. And you sit out there quiet and you know you got an opinion because you're sitting there talking to me right now. You're sitting there, you're at your computer or you're at your cell phone or however it is you're getting this stream. But you can call in at 657-383-0995 or go to X. You can send me a Facebook message. If you click on the show from Facebook or Twitter, you can send me a tweet at Scott Smith at 2014 and Scott Smith 2014 on Twitter. You can hit me up on Facebook at Scott Smith. You see the link where you clicked in, make a comment down the block. I can see my Facebook right now. Send me a message, let me know what you're thinking. I ain't got to say your name, I just want to answer your question. Then we get to talk about the law on drugs, which basically hooks into what we call the criminalization of poverty and mass criminalization. And you use big words like that, Satanism will sit there and automatically tell you, oh, he's being uppity. He's being highfalutin. All into different type of words that basically says, you think you're smarter than me. But no, it's not the type of game.
It really isn't. It's more or less, it's like, hey, we can all live better. We just need to open this thing up and try to make life happen for all of us. Really, you've got to sit here and think about this. We're stifling our own Republicans. You want to make more profit in your businesses. You want to see your companies grow. Stalling progress is not going to do that. You can do better than just trading with your buddies. You could be trading with me. You could be trading with my LGBT friends. Hold on, I got a call in here. I'm going to take this call.
Hello.
How are you doing? Welcome to Scout Smith. I'm down talking daily.
Well, hey, Scout, this is Stacy. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Ms. Hopkins. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. I was on Twitter. I saw that you were broadcasting and listened, and I couldn't let you be mad all by yourself today. So I figured I'd call in and, that's how we roll.
Yeah, I know. So what you got? What's on your mind?
Well, I was listening to some of your comments about some of the problems that we have going on in Georgia, and I just wanted to comment about what we're seeing is a spectacular backpedaling by GOP legislators, because they're having problems with getting the transportation bill passed. They need Democratic votes to get that through. But the biggest problem for them was to get through the anti-tax rhetoric that they hammered home. It's a brand new day now that they are in charge of governance, and their dogs have finally, their chickens have come home to roost, and now they're trying to find creative ways to go against what they initially said. And it's stunning, to hear what's going on. And this is, I have a problem with all of these, what we're hearing coming out of the Republican and conservative circles now are the same things that Democrats and progressives have been saying, particularly the progressive wing, has been saying for years now. And now, all of a sudden it's, well, yeah, maybe we need to look at this. Oh, yeah, maybe we need to expand Medicaid because we're seeing that our budget is a little tight. We run out of shells to do the shell game. we may need to take that money that we're leaving on the table with Medicaid expansion. And as far as some of the people in the South being smart, there's a difference between being smart and being slick. Now,
right,
a lot
right.
of people, you know, smart, that may be a bit of a stretch, but slick, they got it. They got it. And it has been a massive public manipulation of people's minds, emotions, the distortion of facts, and it has done none of us any good, none of us. So, you know,
I really,
go ahead.
You're right on that, because it comes down to the fact that, you know, like I said earlier, it doesn't hit them until it starts affecting something that they want to do. When it starts affecting
right.
them and hitting their home or hitting their limits, like I said, they don't want to accept Medicaid expansion funds, but now they have their constituencies yelling at them from all across the state because hospitals are closing in places that we probably never heard of or never been to, but their constituencies are hurting from it. So now it's like, what you going to do about it? My grandmama needs surgery, and I got to drive all the way to Savannah to get it for her. Or I got to come all the way to Atlanta, and I got to drive 4 hours and spend gas and food money that I could be spending in the local economy if I had a hospital. But see, now it's coming to them, so now, well, I got to find a way to get this Medicaid expansion money without sounding like I love President Obama. No, you ain't got to sound like you love him. Just do what's right for your people, which is get Medicaid expansion.
Which is what it should have been from the start. But, you know, once again, we take issues, we hyperpolarize them by interjecting very partisan politics in it. And this is what we saw the Republicans do here in Georgia, and they did it quite well. Now they need Democrats and, you know, the liberal side of the aisle to help them out. And it's kind of tempting to, you know, look at them and say, you know, I can't help you. But that would be just as wrong because, as you said, it's about the people. And I don't really give a flying flip-flop who does what, who takes the credit, who walks around with the big S on their chest. They need to get it done because what they don't understand and what they are so disconnected to is that people are hurting. People are hanging on. People are, you know, they're just trying to make a way out of no way at all. And once it finally hits home, then they begin to see it. But until the people themselves start to speak out and let them know, they don't care because a lot of this stuff is done with impunity because they think we don't care. That and we don't. Well, a lot of times when we need voices to cry out, they're simply not there. We get mad about some things, but, you know, our anger seems to last as long as the hashtag is trending.
Right, exactly. And that's another thing that, you know, I think sometimes holds us down the South is that we kind of reactionary. We're not very proactive on situations. We see it coming down the road, and it's like, okay, I'm going to sit here and chew on this straw until it gets in front of my house, and then I'm going to react about it. But then that's too late. You can stop that thing coming down the street. You know, it just like, for instance, I was sitting there talking about the marijuana bill that's sitting down there. Well, I see it happening all around the country where everybody else is starting to legalize and or in some form or fashion, even the federal government, has snuck a provision into a bill in which they're going to basically get rid of the ban on medical marijuana. Why are we still sitting here talking about doing a trial or whatever when we know it helps folks, but it's then become an issue in Georgia. Democrats have been talking about it for like the last two sessions, just couldn't get nothing done. But all now, you know, conservative families who got money are being able to get on airplanes and go to Colorado to get what they need. And they don't start hollering and raising, saying that they local representatives are saying, hey, you need to do something about it. Oh, that's a problem.
Well, it's a bit disingenuous because they have chopped and screwed that bill up so that it's basically ineffective. And for those who really need the medical marijuana oil, the cannabis oil, the formula that they have is really not going to be helpful for them. Now, me personally, I'm for full legalization, you know, medical and recreational. you know, I am a bit distressed about the picking and choosing of those who are deserving of this treatment, even as ineffectual as it is. If you're going to say you're concerned about children, you're concerned about them, period. And I was just having a conversation on Twitter about with a young lady about the autism bill, the Ava's Law, SB1. And that's another issue where, you know, if you're going to get up there, beat your chest and say, I care about Georgia's children, don't tell me, show me. Pass these bills and do it without saying, well, we're going to do it to help this group. You know, if I help a child, I'm not going to sit there and say, well, you know, I need to know a little bit more about your background so I know whether or not I can help you. If you're in need of help, you're in need of help. And whether it's autism, whether it's sickle cell, whether it's lupus, you know, no matter what disease, I'd rather someone use something that's a natural substance than have some sort of pharmaceutical and see the 1-800-MY-BAD commercial a couple of weeks down the road because people are waking up with mustaches on their hips. You know, it makes no sense. Well, it makes a lot of sense in the fact that they're trying to figure out a way to best capitalize on it, and it seems like in terms of medical marijuana, it looks like how are we going to empower a corporation who can benefit having a lock on it in Georgia. That's the wrong way to do this. That is absolutely the wrong way. So I'm with you on that, bro.
Yeah, you know, and then I'm sitting there and I'm talking about these folks over here in Alabama, and that's really ticking me. And then it's worse, and then I think it's just as bad here because you got SB 129 sitting out there. And I am so glad. I laughed my behind off when I read the story that the Wiccan Church had jumped on the SB 129 bandwagon because I sent a message to Josh McCoon the other day on Facebook, and I was like, hey, what you going to do when you drive up to the gas station and you got your Joy FM sticker on the back of your car and the Hindi or Sikh that's running the gas station decides he's not going to sell you in the gas because he don't serve Christian? And we know, I know for a fact in his district that the vast majority of gas stations are owned by East Indians. And so when the large Christian population can't buy gas no more because they decided it's against their religion to deal with us, what you going to do?
Jesus takes the wheel.
You can't go to the hotel and rent alone. Why? Because who owns the hotel?
Well, you know, laws often have unintended consequences, and the current Georgia legislative body has a history of bringing these bills that are based on these are designed to appease their base, and they don't really think that much. They don't think further in the future to see how it can affect others outside of that base, which A, tells you they don't care, and B, they're not very smart. So, and right, they're being just as reactive as anyone else. It'll be interesting to see if this bill actually passes, to see if we saw what happened in Arizona with the large corporations stepping up, because this goes against policy that a lot of large corporations already have in their workplace. So it'll be interesting to see if it passes, and if it does, you know, it's practically guaranteed we're going to have a legal challenge to it. But it, you know, it's really, really distressing. And to see all the other elements that came in behind it, because, you know, when the LGBT community you know, jumped in, and I'm not blaming them, but I think they exacerbated the problem by demanding that Mayor Reed fire Cochran. That gave them a ready-made poster boy to push this bill through. So, you know, it's going to be quite a battle, and it's going to be interesting to see if it goes through. But that, you know, with everything. You know, with everything, you and I, we hear a lot from Georgians on the ground every day. I'm pretty safe in saying that religious freedom is not an issue that you hear a lot of problems. When you hear people like, we want, you know, we got people fighting, you know, to get better jobs, you know, to unionize, to have the right to organize in their workplace, you know, foreclosures is still a big issue.
Right.
We hear education, all of the things that we hear about from the actual people is not what they take up. And you know, now that crossover day has passed, now we're going to see, now this is the real Philly season.
Right. I got another caller that came in. Hey, caller.
Okay.
Identify yourself and welcome to the Downtown Daily.
How you doing? This is Ty from D.C.
Hey, Ty, how you doing? How you doing? So what's your take on the conversation we're having?
I'm finding it very fascinating. I was looking at SB 129 and a bunch of other things. You know, this country's getting bigger and bigger, and history has shown in every time you get a new group of people that comes into an inhabited place, there's a fight for resources. And that's really what slavery was about. You know, when the settlers came over here, you know, they were getting all of their financial resources from England, and they needed to expand in order to be able to afford to pay all the taxes and stuff. But at a certain point, they wanted independence. They wanted to be able to make their own money. And what made them break apart as a people was is that they had a disagreement on who was going to get what. So the South and the North had that disagreement. Now, because we all share the same dollar, we have the same currency, and that dollar says that that dollar is worth a certain amount of resources. And everybody that comes into this country has to get dollar. Everybody is trying to group up with who they have a political or religious affiliation with, and pass legislations and different things to make sure that they maintain power within themselves or their communities. And so you're seeing that a lot. And then you have the local government has to make their money too. And I know Georgia has a lot of things. Georgia is very interesting to me because they got that bill for all making all warrants, no knock, and then they got a whole bunch of other stuff. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. But
that feels dead.
I don't know the number. I was looking at it the other day. I'll
think
find the
no
number.
Knock bill is dead.
The
oh, they finally got
it. Senator Ford's bill, is it dead also?
I don't think
I
Senator Ford's bill is dead, but I think the one that would have they're going to codify it in some way. But I think the one that was really, really troubling is the one that's out. But I believe, don't hold me to it, but I think Senator Ford's bill is still alive.
Okay, cool, cool. Because he had a pretty good idea on how to deal with that. And, you know, Senator Ford always got the back of the people. So, you know, if he's down for it, I'm down for it.
Yeah, it's really difficult. You know, that's a tricky one because I do get the argument about not wanting, you know, we're codifying something that actually isn't legal. It's more of a procedure. And so that is tricky. But if they are going to use that, then perhaps we should be a bit proactive in saying how they can be used. And that is, you know, one of the more troubling aspects of trying to address, you know, that came out of the Black Lives Matter, because all these demands, you know, came out, we need to do this, we need to do that, which were, and I'm not saying they aren't good ideas, but in terms of the law and how we do this, you know, we have to avoid those unintended consequences that we see elsewhere. So, but I'm glad. It's really good to hear that other people in other states are looking at what's going on in Georgia, because I swear this is like the land time forgot. It is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in my life.
Now, let me ask you a question, Ty, from the D.C. perspective, because, you know, I know folks in D.C. don't necessarily consider themselves to be Southerners, but technically y'all south of the Mason-Dixon line. You know, y'all just talk with a Southern, y'all talk with a Northern accent, but deal with Southern problems because of the way that Congress deals with the city of D.C. Because I know y'all had to just pass a
ordinance or a law in D.C. that basically legalized the possession of marijuana. It still hasn't legalized the sale of it. And Congress is jumping all down y'all back about it. So how is that playing out with y'all up in D.C.?
It's so weird because they have rules or laws on you being able to have the marijuana, I think, but no, it's the materials you can't have. And then at one point they were saying it's the materials they had a problem with. But so either way you slice it, it's like they pass one thing to judicially act against another. And it's like, oh my goodness, they just really want to collect revenue off people. They want to say, oh yeah, you get this, but we're going to put you in jail anyway for having it, or we're going to go ahead and fine you. It's really about the fines, because they're just fining a bunch of folks. It's really about getting that revenue. So they'll say, hey, look, you can have it, but you can't. But the materials we have a problem with. Then they'll switch it up. And so they end up – I mean, it's a catch and release right now in D.C. where they'll catch a bunch of brothers, and they just give them citations, a lot of them. They're just giving out a lot of citations right now. It is really weird to see. But they pay their fine, I mean, because they know that these people, rather than fight with them over some drug, they'll pay the fine. Talk about how
bullying. You'll pay the fine because you ain't got time to spend up in jail. So you'll pay the fine. And that's one of the things that I was going, that I was trending toward was, is that you look at places like Ferguson, which a lot of folks still don't understand when it breaks down. If you look back at the Missouri Compromise of 1850, you know, Missouri still has some aspects of Southernness to it. But everybody, we can't legally have slavery in which you can put me out in the field and work me. But what you do is, as I walk down the street, you try to figure out a way to take money from me as I walk down the street. So you figure out, hey, the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States basically allows you to enslave me if I don't follow the law. And you can, if I break your laws, you can enslave me in some form or fashion. But you can't, it's not popular to put me in chattel slavery. So what you're going to do is make it a way that you're going to fine me to death, and you're going to keep me beholden to you by making me indebted to you for my freedom. So I got to constantly be paying to try to make sure I keep my manumission papers so the patent owners don't come pick me up. So
exactly.
What are we looking at?
Well, slavery always has been and always will be about money. So,
yeah,
I mean, it makes sense. As long as we have a criminal justice system that is, you know, and I think the best description of it, when this was in reference to the Ferguson Police Department, but when they referred it to an armed collection agency, that's all this is a gigantic mechanism designed to extract the most revenue. And when we have legalization that takes the decriminalization component out of it, they're going to be short. But I would suggest that those in D.C., y'all better learn how to bake and make you some brownies and cookies, because what are you going to do, criminalize bacon? But I would be in that kitchen making me some brownies, man. But it's really, really, what's really offensive is that, you know, we hear talks about liberty and, you know, the framers and you know, bringing freedom to other countries. We can't seem to do it here because D.C. and John Oliver had a really great piece on his HBO show about the other territories who have basically taxation without representation, and where they don't even have the right to vote, you know. So it's really offensive for Congress to come in and override the will of what the people said. This goes against everything we claim to stand for.
Exactly. You know, you listen to conservatives talk about, particularly the Tea Party said, sit there and talk about the spirit of the revolution and this, that, and the other. Well, you know, being picked up and frisked on the street and people arbitrarily making you pay fines and stuff like that was basically a tax. It's the whole reason that the colonists rose up to begin with. And we always have to remember that all of these colonists were not white. There were thousands upon thousands of freed and enslaved blacks who picked up the cause of freedom alongside their white brethren here in the United States for the same doggone reason.
But when you listen to it, when the argument starts, whether or not you're watching it on social media, if you're watching it on the news, whatever, the first thing that you hear conservatives go, they try to take and detach that sentiment from it, and they start talking to our community as if we've done did something wrong. And all we've done is continue to exist and survive in America. And a young man from Ferguson said it so eloquently on Al Jazeera about a week ago. He said, I'm trying to survive and navigate a system that was not designed for me to be a part of.
Because the
anchor was saying, well, why are y'all not running for government positions? Why are you not, trying to get, he said, because even if I become an elected official, I'm still trying to navigate a system that was not designed for me to navigate in it. He said, so it makes my job, and he said, that makes my job as an elected official a lot harder. He said, what we're trying to do, from his perspective, what he was saying, what we're trying to do is change the system and redesign it so that now we can be included in it. And that's what we need to be sitting there talking about, because the way the American Republic is set up today, it is not set up in a way in which we can actively take part in it and nobody changes the rules of the game on every time we turn around the corner, because that's what this is basically about. If nobody will want to admit it, even particularly in the South, is that Barack Hussein Obama was never supposed to get elected to become president of the United States. That was not supposed to happen. The Negro was supposed to be able to run. He was supposed to be able to raise the money, but good white folks should never have allowed that black man to get elected and move into 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. That was not supposed to happen. So now they have figured out, oh, they don't learn how to play the game. Now they're trying to switch the game up. They want to be obstructionists. They want to change the rules mid-stroke, but it's not going to happen that easy, because this is America. We have a tendency to fight back. And that's what we see happening today, is people are fighting back. And again, all white people are not bad, because every step we've taken, when you see progress, you see that progress take place in diverse settings. It always has been those who see where we're going and we see where they're going, we stood together in coalitions and pushed forward. It's these backward-thinking folks who want to exclude themselves that find themselves always on the wrong side of history time and time again. And that's why we got folks in Georgia wanting to pass bills banning AP history.
Yeah, and I'm a parent of two high schoolers and one of them who's in AP history. And let me tell you, my head explodes at some of the things. People, if you have a child in school, you need to read those books. You need to see what our children are being taught, because you will be amazed at what's in there. And, they feel that, they just want a kinder, gentler, that history is not kind to what has happened. And, the truth can be brutal, but it is what it is. And, it's the whitewashing of history. But getting back to, the Ferguson comment and about occupying the system. Barack Obama got elected because of our use of the system. So, one way you cannot say that this, and it's hard to say the system that hasn't worked for you. True, it was not designed for you, but that doesn't mean you can't flip the script. But in order to do that, you have to understand how it works, and you have to get inside it to force that change. Because,
that's true.
And so, I hear what some of the younger activists are saying, and I respect it, but I don't think that they have a full grasp of how the system has not been used. Because, I did a lot of voter registration and civic engagement work, and I would hear people, I don't vote because, nothing has ever changed in my community. And, trying to connect the dots for them, that's exactly why you haven't seen any change, because you haven't used the system and you allowed some clowns to slide up in the home plate. And they know what to do with it. And, if you want to know where the power lies, just look at how we see the attacks on voting rights. and to suppress voting. We have suppressive mechanisms in place already with felon disenfranchisement. We're seeing groups like the Koch brothers and other special interest groups spend a lot of money to make sure you don't get out there and vote. So if you don't recognize that as that being your power, at the base of your power, then you're missing the whole thing. Our system, as imperfect as it is an amalgamation of a bunch of systems. It is not, there is nothing pure about the American system. And even with its flaws and even with the Constitution, you know, and that troubling phrase, the consent of the governed, which automatically discounts quite a few people, it still is the best thing that we have, and it can be made to work, but we have to know how power is achieved here, how to obtain it, and how to wield it correctly. Because we have people inside that system of power. The problem is they haven't done the right thing with it. Instead of doing what they were supposed to do, they pretty much, you know, we've got a problem with this, and you'll hear this in the hood a lot. I got mine. You get yours.
Exactly.
We've got that mentality that goes from the bottom to the top, and we got to get rid of it.
Because a lot of times I think people kind of forget the fact that this is supposed to be a democracy. And people hear me talk about this all the time. I am a major student of the study of the book Politics by Aristotle. And the whole point of democracy is the demos part of democracy, the people. And people are supposed to go in, take turns governing one another so that other people can go do productive things to make society better. But what we got is a political class that has risen up, that this is all that they do, this is all that they live for, and they got their hand in the cookie jar. And for somehow we have started putting them on a pedestal where they're pseudo-aristocrats. We think they are better than us, smarter than us. This is subconsciously now. We're not saying this out of our mouths, but our actions are saying it. And these people start thinking that they're different than us, when in all actuality, you are the same person. You are the same publican. You are the same person that comes from the rest of society. You are an equal with us, and we've chosen you to take care of that business for us while we go grow food, build products, give services so that we can keep the economy going. And your job is to make sure that everything stays right so we can keep that happening. And then you need to take a step down for after a while and let somebody else go take that turn. You're going to make some money doing something else. You're supposed to go take turns, and we done forgot that system. We got a system now where it's not as you go put down your plow shell for now and go deal with the problems, and my folks will help go till your land. We're not doing that. So, like you said, we got folks out there doing the wrong thing with it. It's a hustle now. Everybody want to put their hands in the cookie jar. And that's where we're going on. Everybody want their hand in the cookie jar.
You know, I mean,
the cookies are good.
Cookies are good. You know, they're tasty.
They are. Them cookies be off the chain. Particularly when you do it like you're talking about, Stacey. Bake them up. They're good.
Well, you know what? That might be what America needs right now. Everybody eat a cookie and calm down, because we got folks who are out of pocket and unhinged. But I think that is probably the biggest obstacle that we face in the corruption. You know, I hear a lot coming out of Ferguson, you know, now we need to, you know, register people to vote. Well, who are they going to vote for? And if we wipe everything clean, is there a bench ready to occupy that space and do the right thing? Or are you just clearing the field for a new set of pimps and hustlers to come in there? And, you know, I know some may clutch the pearls at my use of the word pimps and hustlers, but that's what they are. You know, the game is...
I wish I had a cue-up song for right there. Oh, the pimps came.
So, you know, people need to understand that it's going to be more than just voting them out and, you know, voting someone in. You have to have people who are willing to do that, and it's not for everybody. It really is not, and I have to give mad props to anyone who does decide to run because, and Scout, you know, we know this best. There is no, it, now, talk about the Terror Dome. It's a beast, and modern politics is morphed into something that goes against everything that we claim to be for. No, everybody can't be run for office because now you need massive amounts of money to run. And the only reason we need massive amounts to run is to play to get ad time that nobody listens to and that's full of lies and distortions and other untruths. So, you know, we have to kind of unmantle that system, and a lot of it is going to take how we actually think, because a lot of people make their decisions based on those 30-second ads or those one-minute ads that they see on TV that are based on these mailers. I have every mailer that I got the last election
cycle. I did, too. As a matter of fact, I got a box with the last two election cycles in it, and I'm watching as I'm going through looking at the mailers and stuff that people are sending out. I'm like, it is getting crazy because you watch the money. When I was just having a conversation with some people earlier this morning about how you tackle certain situations and certain issues, and the thing is that people who really, really care about what's going on in their community want to be engaged, but then when they start talking to folks that, you know, this is the game we play, you know, we out there and this is what we do, and you tell them, okay, this is how the opposition is going to play you, this is how you have to respond to it, it's grimy. And then folks start looking like, you know, I don't know if I want to be involved with that because this is nasty, it's cruddy. You feel bad because I know I come in sometimes and I'm like, I can't shower enough to get the stank off. But I decided to join this game, and it's like La Costa Nostra. Once you in the mob, you in the mob.
True, but, you know, it's no different. And what I tell people, this is nothing more than the game on a different playing field. And if you play the game in the street, you can play it in politics. It's just that the players are different, they wear different gear, and they speak a different language sometimes, you know. But it's
right.
The same game that you see played every day. And it's a shame because it speaks to a deeper malaise that's within us. You know, we have, in a way, as a society, we have allowed, the cream mentality. Cash rules everything around us. And we allow it, you know, now we look at candidates not because of what they say, but how much money they have in the bank. You know, I'm not looking for well, it really does, and it's not good for, you know, democracy or the democratic process. I hate to use the word democracy because we don't really have a full-blown democracy. But, no, we don't. If we had a full-blown democracy, nothing would get done.
You're right. But I wanted to ask Ty a question because you in D.C., and obviously, you know, if you're looking at what we got going on down this way, other folks are looking at that. Are there conversations taking place between folks up in D.C. about how crazy stuff goes? Because I know a lot of folks got relatives down this way, and y'all are talking.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, what's the conversation going on up there about the stuff that they see going on down here?
Well, the conversation that I have, at least, I mean, I've had lots of conversations with young men on the Metro Rail. You know, we talk about it all the time. And the first thing that usually happens is either they won't want to talk about it. They'll eventually talk about it, but they'll go, "Oh, it's just the system and this, that, and other." And then they'll start opening up about it and how crazy it is, how, you know, they're being persecuted and all this stuff. And I said, listen, I said, you have a city full of people where there are fewer resources and more people. And the people there, it's like, okay, If I have a bowl of soup in the middle of the room, and I told a young man, and the person who made the soup and controls the soup is handing out tickets, and says, okay, each one of you send a representative from your family, and that ticket will have a number of how many cups of soup you can get. And everybody gets in the room to represent their family, and they show their tickets, and everybody's got a different number. Some people are going to be upset because they got seven family members outside, and their ticket says one cup, where someone only has two family members, and their ticket says 20 cups. Now, imagine if the person with 20 cups is white and you're black. You know, imagine how unfair you're going to feel. And I said the reason why that is because you don't have any lobbying power. You don't have enough tickets to come together to control, because if you have enough tickets, if all 20 people who got tickets to say one decide, no, I don't want your soup since you won't give us a fair amount, the soup makers got to look at it and say, okay, I was giving these white people X amount of soup, but the whole thing is I have to sell soup for, so that I can make money myself. And if those 20 blacks don't eat my soup, I'm going to be giving all these white people this extra soup. It's not going to be worth it for me. I'm not going to be able to make enough money to feed myself. So it's about lobbying power. And those people there, they don't have a lot of people, not all of them, because some work in other parts of St. Louis County, but a lot are on aid and different things. And they just don't know where they're going to go and put the money. And the city is taxing them, and they're depressed. And they don't know who to trust and what to do, but they have no lobbying power. And a lot of times you'll see areas like that where the people don't even have a credit union, or the people, you know, with black businesses. And I tell young men all the time, that's also part of lobbying. One of the worst things they did was burn down the black businesses. Don't burn your lobbyists up, because they're the only ones in your community that have some revenue. Everybody else is don't have any revenue. They have to go out. They're the only ones in there bringing in taxable revenue for that area, and you burn them down. So what now? So
that means
the
city
it's all about
that. You more for citations. Yep.
Right. It just makes things worse.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And you know, for me, I think we need to stop telling people, instead of waiting for somebody to hand you some soup, go on and cook up a pot of your own soup. And stop waiting for someone to give you something, because from the outset, they said, you know, to use your analogy, it's like, okay, I'm going to keep a lot of this soup for me and for communities of color, no soup for you. They never gave us any soup, and they told you, well, what's your problem? You know, we've got soup. You need to make your own soup. I think we should take their advice and make our own soup sometimes, because we don't do that enough. And, you know, I have conversations with folks about capitalism. And, you know, when we look back at some of the areas or some of the black-owned districts, such as Auburn Avenue, 120, you know, Harlem, Chicago, Black Wall Street, they were all centers of black economic power. We were shopping in our own stores with our own businesses. And one of the great things that came out of after Ferguson was the Buy Black movement. Because as we see, and I live in an area in Southwest Atlanta where I see a lot of immigrants, they come over here with 58 cents in their pocket. They come up here, they move in, and there may be like 18 of them in one house at one time. And one by one, they pull their money together. And one by one, they start moving out. Next year, a couple of them got houses. The year after that, they got their own business. The year after that, they're owning a plaza. And
exactly.
9 times out of 10, they've done it without asking the government for much help. They did it by empowering themselves. And I sit here and I watch Latinos. They will drive, if you know, I'm on the south side of Atlanta. They will drive to the north side of town to use a business in their own community. Black people do not do that anymore. And we have to understand where our power lies economically, politically, and look back to in history where we gotten it right. Now, we can debate about capitalism. There are some people who come out and say capitalism is bad, and you know, and that we should move to a more socialistic or even communistic system. Well, we tried that the Pilgrims tried that. That didn't work out so good. I don't think it's in our human nature, or we have gotten far from it where we've done that. We seem to have been fighting each other since we climbed out of the muck. But
this is one thing when you talk about the capitalism side, and I'm trying to get folks to understand this. You know, you hear conservatives use the word free market economy. I don't believe that's a lie. I do believe in free enterprise, because the free enterprise basically says that, hey, I'm going to, and I talked about this at the beginning of the show when I was doing my intro spiel. Is that free enterprise is the ability for the little guy like me to come out, provide a good or service on the same footing, and they're going to promote it and put it out there as the big guy. And if I give a good enough product or service, I can put the big guy out of business. Free market system basically says that the big guy gets all of the advantages. He gets the prime space. He doesn't have to, it's set up the way he doesn't have to compete with me, and he can automatically snuff me out. If we went to free enterprise versus free market, where I can go in there and equally compete and make you and get an equal chance at it through regulation of the economic system, that's where we need to go. And conservatives understand this because at one time they did it. But again, as we talk about how the system is, we learn how to play in the system, and then they rig it to where the system starts to work against us, and that's where it takes place on the economic realm to me. I wish I had John Jackson on here from last week, because that he could probably break down the economics of it better than anybody.
Bring him
it's
back.
It's funny, though. It's funny.
Where you at, John? I know you probably
crazy.
Didn't listen to that,
but that just goes to that shows the power of messaging, you know, and how it can distort the actual conversation. I agree with you. The free market is a myth, and one that has been perpetuated for quite a long time. There is no such thing as a free market. It operates under its own restrictions. But the base of the whole issue is the whole government intervention, and the role that government plays in free enterprise is ensuring that there is an even playing field for all.
Right.
So, you know, naturally you're going to see some pushback about it, but it's a lot of muck that we have to wade through. And that's a conversation that often puts me at odds with my fellow progressives. You know, because some in the black community who feel that, you know, you hear capitalism is bad. And, you know, I think the form of capitalism that we see now, the laissez-faire capitalism, yes, that is bad. That is very detrimental. Mm-hmm. That plays into the free market beliefs. But capitalism as a system and society as it currently stands, it is a way for us to realize our power and for people to make a living. Everybody wants, you know, I very rarely come across people who don't want to work, you know, who don't
exactly.
want to, you know, provide for their family. And that's another big misnomer.
You know, the funny thing about those businesses, they proved that a black business in a black area, a black-owned business, has a high rate of failure because they cannot afford to employ a lot of people, and they cannot afford to get the product that people want at a competitive price. If it takes the manufacturer 20 cents to make a box and they sell it for 100, they're making $99.80 in markup. And in order for them to – they're going to sell it, but they're going to sell it in – a rich area for the suggested retail price and say, here, this is what we want to charge. And when they've sold all they want to sell for that season, they pull it, send it out to liquidation, sell in the poor area for $50. And black people climb. They get the guest bags. They go and get all this stuff, and they feed the big business. And the big business can afford to go ahead and say, okay, we can afford to buy more units than the little guy to get it at a competitive price so we can sell it and make a profit. The little guy, he can't afford all those commercial products to put in his store. He can afford competitive products, but black people are not going to buy those. They want the guest bags. They want all of the Jordans. They want to go buy, which is nothing wrong with it, but they want to go run the Foot Locker. And so those are the only businesses that open up in black communities are the strip malls that have the Foot Locker. These things, because we spend so much frequently. We don't just spend a lot there. We go back there day in and day out and put that money in there. We'll spend whole checks on tennis shoes, but we don't have computers at home.
Ooh, yes.
And
you get talking about the Foot Lockers and all these big box stores that come in. The one, we don't own them. And then if you look at, if you go look at the list of stockholders, none of us are major stockholders in it. Even our rich African-American billionaires and millionaires, they're not even owners of stock in some of these companies. Not in a major way. They might have a 1% or 2% or 0.002% interest in a company or so on. But most of them are not major stockholders, whereas if they had an influential vote at a stockholders meeting to actually make the company go in one direction or another. Because we don't play
exactly.
That game. We're not in the market game that way.
Exactly.
And I think consumerism drives a lot of us, we have to understand is that there's also power not only in our vote but in our pocket. And that we sometimes, we often find, or I often find looking into certain issues, is that we actually empower the people we're against with our pocket, And what's stunning,
exactly.
Remember back in the day when everybody was wearing Tommy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
And then, then the backlash when Tommy came out and then everybody switched to FUBU. Which was it was a really catchy name and everything. And the hot gene now is True Religion, which I have a lot of fights with my kids about, because I'm like, I ain't paying $250 for no jeans. and watching people who, there's a Foot Locker close to the Atlanta University Center in Atlanta, where Spelman, Morehouse, and Clark Atlanta and Morris Brown are. And they have signs out there, at midnight, get your new shoes. There's a finish line up the street from me where people will sit there. And I thought they were giving out money. It was people waiting for the latest brand of Jordans. And they,
exactly.
People need to understand where their dollar goes, because you're actually, what I love to see is people, wearing Jordans talking about, well, we have to fight, wage abuse and, we have to fight, injustices everywhere. Well, they're on your feet. You're wearing injustice.
I just sit here and thought about it, and it goes with Ty said about the shoes versus the computers. Now, you know the same thing takes place outside the Apple store every time that the new iPhone comes out. But you want to look at the people who are standing in line. Now, we are standing in line for a pair of shoes that we wear out in less than 6 months. But our other friends stand in line for the newest technology that may help them become more productive, and they figure out ways to take and utilize that technology into ways that's going to make them some more money. We're giving away something. Well, they may be giving away something too, but they're looking at, well, I'm going to get this because it's going to allow me to do this. It's going to allow me to stay in contact with this, or it's going to allow me to do this. They look at what it's going to let them do. They look at the value that they're gaining from buying a new iPhone. Well, all we're trying to do is step for our friends on a pair of shoes that we're scared to let somebody scuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of hard because there's always a cool side of the pillow when we talk about issues. And when it comes to the black community, if you point out some of the problems that you see. Then people, you don't love black people. No, I love black people. But what I need there, and here's the thing, that just because we may be talking about a segment of the black community, it is by no means indicative of the entire community. But there are some folks, and every family got one, you know, regardless of who your tribe is and who you're repping for, you got some people in there who need to do better. And it's not a matter of tearing you down or talking about it. It's just pointing out where we need you to do better in order for all of us to rise up. And that is, you know, a very, very big problem. I hear a lot of people rail about, you know, East Indians and Koreans, you know, having stores in our community, which is an issue, which is an issue for me, because it's very, and I have a Korean grocer up the street from me. She's a wonderful, her and her husband, they're wonderful, and they're very nice people, and they're working to make a living. But my problem is, you make your money in my community, but you don't live here. You take your profits, and you live on the other side of town. So you're not, and when I, you know, some of these stores you go in, and, you know, you were talking about a certain brand, and I had one of my neighbors, we went into another corner store, which is another thing. You can hit about 18 different corner stores in a five-block radius in some neighborhoods. But we walked in, and we saw it was actually Walmart brand stuff on the shelves. So they're getting stuff from other stores and putting them on their shelves. And he had me dying because he said, you know, you walk up in here and you see Captain America and Joe Louis brand stuff. And we were like, Captain America, what is you talking about? But, you know, we see a lot of people who make their wealth and off of the black community. And then when I ask people, well, you know, why don't you shop at this store? Well, you know, they don't have what I need, or, you know, we also have ingrained, if you want good stuff, you got to go see the white folks. And that, and they're also, you know, and there sometimes, you know, there's the mentality, well, since you're a black owner, I need to get the hookup. You know, and that's a problem, too. You know, well, I need to get the hookup because, you know, you my folks, you know, so hook a sister up. They're business people. They're, you know, they're in the business, and they can't survive by giving subsidies to those who just who constantly want the hookup. You just can't do it. So we have to look at how we buy, what we buy, how our money, where our money ends up, and learning how to support more of our businesses more, because it is killing us, you know, especially when I, in Atlanta, you go to areas such as Marietta Square, downtown Decatur, you see all of these great, wonderful little shops. On the north, on the south side of Atlanta, you see nail salons, chicken joints, tire joint, you know, you can get you some rims. Lord knows we got to, and this is one of my pet peeves, the tax services. There's plenty of those. But, you know, you don't see the same quality or the same variety of vendors that that you see in other white business districts or white-owned business districts. And that is a problem. That is a real problem.
And you know what's even worse about that is that you ought to, when you close your eyes and you sit there and think about the African American community and the stores with the corner stores, this, that, and the other, you sitting there thinking, okay, this is probably the lower end of the spectrum, but I'm now living, you know, when I'm in the Atlanta area, I live in the Stone Mountain area now. I mean, in a really, 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 really nice area.
Exactly.
And so I'm here, and I still see the chicken joint, the nail salon.
I was going to say that.
And we're talking about down the street, you know, $350,000, half a million dollar houses. And I love coffee. I love coffee. I ain't got
you won't
Starbucks.
Find no
I don't
Starbucks.
Nowhere around me. Okay? But this is what else I don't have. I don't even have a regular coffee joint. You know, I was this morning I went and had a coffee meeting with some folks here in DeKalb County, and we was at a nice little coffee spot in downtown Decatur, right outside of downtown Decatur. Really cool spot. It's almost like that spot you took. You remember, Stacey, that little spot you took me to, the little community ground spot?
Yeah.
It's a spot similar to that, just as nice. If you go over off near Auburn Avenue, you got La Fruta. They sell like, I don't have anything like that in the African-American community. And I know these Negroes drink coffee because I see them lined up at the Starbucks when as soon as they get into the white folks' neighborhood. You don't dream. You get up early enough in the morning to go drive on your commute. You move an extra 15 minutes early so that you can get in the line at the Starbucks around from where you work at, when you could have been getting in the line at the Starbucks or a coffee shop of similar nature down the street from your house, and we know you drank coffee. So why, you know, you say, but when an African-American goes, hey, I'm going to open up a coffee shop, and he opens up that coffee shop, and even though it looks nice, this, that, and the other, we don't even go to, I can make it look just like the cool coffee shop in Decatur or over there at Community Grounds, but nobody's going to come get it because they automatically think, oh, black folks run that. It ain't going to be the same thing. And the moment they walk in there and see us in there, it ain't gonna work, man. If I get me some other people up in there, some Hispanics, some Indians, some white folks running the joint front, I might be able to roll. But and that's a shame.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I have to say, you know, the last time I was in D.C., you know, I just started coming back to D.C. and when my grandmother lived there in the 70s, they were just breaking ground on the metro system. And,
right.
You know, it was really great to come back and see how, and I love D.C.'s metro system, but it was too funny. I got off at DuPont Circle. I came up, I said, oh, wow, look at this. I mean, I didn't know where I was because before DuPont Circle used to be off the chain. And it was like, well,
exactly.
Look at this. I didn't even recognize it. And I had to ask people. I did. I asked them, excuse me, what happened to the people who used to live here? You know, where did they go? And, you know, to see these houses that are now going for a half a mil.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, you know, you could have gave some of those houses away back in the day. It was just really, really stunning to see it and to see all the little shops. And, you know, I got a, you know, Spike Lee, his rant on gentrification, spot on, you know. And
love
part
it.
Of it, part of it, you know, there is what he coined the Christopher Columbus syndrome, you know,
mm-hmm.
When, you know, these neighborhoods, it's like they have sat that they were abandoned. They were allowed to fall into disrepair. And then when white people decide to come on and take it back, then you see these lovely, quaint little shops and these, you know, preserving and rehabbing these houses. And it's like, but why was the community before it so undeserving of the same thing that we find now, you know? And these little shops that pop up, we would have loved to have had that there. The question is, why can't we have that in areas such as Scout, like Stone Mountain and where I'm at over there? Because when I first came to Georgia, I lived in that area. I remember what Memorial Drive used to look like. I remember
right.
what Redan Road used to look like and Covington
right.
Highway. And right now, I can't tell the difference whether I'm in the south side or the north side. And a lot of people who have these houses, they may have bought those houses for $300,000. They're worth less than half that now.
Right. Exactly.
And that we're going to have to attribute to what I like to refer to the Great American Heist of 2008, a.k.a. the financial collapse. That wiped out a whole lot.
Now, we got about 5 minutes left, but I wanted to, you know, another story about that, you know, being over here. There was a little incident over here in our neighborhood. You know, some gunshots rang off, which was kind of disturbing to some of the folks over here. But we still, we felt like at that time, we knew where we were over there after we figured out how long it took the police to get here. It took them 45 minutes. 45 minutes.
What was
to get here. 45
what
minutes.
Was that public enemy? I dialed 115 a long time ago. You know,
yeah, we were on the phone, and you got all these people who were complaining on the phone, like, we called you, we're telling the time stamp, and we called you at so-and-so. And when they finally did come, a couple of supervisors came out here. A couple of us almost got arrested. Because we were
I was
going
to say.
Like as citizens, we felt like we should have been saved, but when you told the police we were citizens and almost be saved, you was like, hold on, I'll take you to jail. And I think it would have been if one of the neighbors had not been a law enforcement agent himself, we all might have been gone that night.
Yeah.
It was kind of looking like what's the Spike Lee movie? Do the Right Thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
We were kind of getting in that road. we was fixing to get ready to get hauled off. We thought Lady Raheem was going to get dropped.
Well, yeah, that's like the brother whose car got carjacked with the baby in the car, and they ended up locking him up.
Yeah, I read that. And I wish y'all had talked about it earlier. We could have talked about that because that's crazy.
We can do that next week.
Yeah, we talk. Yeah, matter of fact, I was planning on doing a show on the police state next week, and that's what we can talk about that because that was just crazy. That was crazy. We need to definitely talk about how the police are doing us with stuff that we do every day, and now we're walking criminals. You never know when the day gonna come you gonna get snatched up. That is.
But folks were good with it.
We talking about that next week.
Yeah, I got a major problem with that.
Yeah. You clarified that now. That's what we're doing next week. We're talking about the police state. We're gonna talk about that because that's a major issue. So
ready for DC?
Oh yeah, I'll be there.
Okay.
So make sure you call it the same bad time, same bad channel, every time, same number. Everything always remains the same over here down south and dirty. We're gonna get into it. But I really appreciate y'all calling in today because I was scared that this show was going to be dry because usually, you know, I get talking about stuff like this and folks are going to be scared because I got a couple of my little white, some of my white progressive friends have sent messages to me. And they, they was like, we want to call in, but we at work right now. So I'm going to have to figure out a way for them to cast the button system so they can call because I would have loved to have heard. Because I know some of y'all are listening out there could have called. My white progressive friends out there. Your voice needs to be heard, too. I know you're listening. You're getting some education on how we think. But we would sure enough like to know what y'all are thinking out there. But you can, if you didn't get a chance to listen to the show live, you know, tell your friends out there, if they didn't get a chance to listen, that the show is always available for download. The link will be going up on Facebook and Twitter right after the show's up. You can always come to Blog Talk, put in Down South and Dirty. You can go back and listen to previous episodes. There are 21 other episodes before this one. And there's also a show that we do on Wednesday nights called Hump Day Prime Time. And I usually go in.
Well, you know me. I ain't never scared.
Yeah, I usually go in. So, you know, I would like folks to be able to listen to that show because it's a completely different type of situation. I'm trying to pull off a John Stewart type of situation where I can make fun of folks. But I really appreciate y'all for calling in. See y'all next week. This is Down South and Dirty with Scott Smith. See y'all
next week. All right, peace, y'all.
Later.